or distinguished from. Dhamma means sutanta, sutta. So abhidhamma means which exceeds the teaching of sutanta. Because some dhamma are partially explained in sutanta, but fully explained in abhidhamma. For example, the discourse on anatta dakkhana sutta, the discourse on non-self, the characteristic of non-self. Buddha said, whatever materiality, whether pleasant, future, past, internal, external, superior, inferior, far or near, gross or subtle, to be seen with inside knowledge as they are non-self. Sorry, they are not my, not I, and not my atta. But Buddha never explain further what are the material, what are the past materiality, what are the future materiality, what are the gross or subtle materiality. But in Abhidhamma, all these 11 types of materiality are well explained. That's why it says that the Abhidhamma exists, the teaching of Sutta. So there are two explanation of Abhidhamma. One is the higher Abhidhamma means the higher teaching related with ultimate truth, or the teaching exists. Sutanta. Is it clear? Okay. So according to the Abhidhamma philosophy, there are two types of truth. Number one is called conventional truth, sammutik satya. Number two is ultimate truth, paramattha satya. What is conventional truth? Conventional truth means the ordinary conceptual thought or conventional mode of expression. For example, table, projector, computer, human being, I, she, house, all these are conventional truths. Because they are called conventional truths because if you penetrate into this conventional truth, you reach ultimate truth. So conventional truth is something seems to exist, but they do not exist on their own right as irreducible reality. They do not exist as by reason of their own intrinsic nature. One can extract something from conventional truth. For example, the chair. If you penetrate into the chair is conventional truth. If you penetrate into the chair, then by the practice of four elements, then the chair will break down into billions of particles. And when you analyze each particle, it contains of eight elements. I think you are very familiar with it already, these eight elements. Earth element, water element, fire element, earth element, color, smell, taste, and nutritive essence. So by penetrating into conventional truth, you finally reach ultimate truth. That's why we say that conventional truth seems to exist, but do not exist as by reason of their own intrinsic nature. Let us see this body. The body, the human body, is also conventional truth. Because when you penetrate into this human body with concentration and wisdom, then this body breaks down into billions of particles. this particle is called kalapas in the body. So kalapas got different color. This kalapas in the body got different color. Even the science, even the science still not yet reaching the ultimate truth. The science still in conventional truth. According to the research of science, initially they find that the smallest is atom. But as they keep on investigating, then they find out the atom consists of nucleus. As they keep on investigating, they find out the nucleus consists of protons and neutrons. And now they even find out the smallest, that's called subatomic particles. This subatomic particles is called kalapa. But kalapa is still conventional truth, not ultimate truth yet. So the science, even the modern science, still remains in the conventional truth. But the Buddhism 2600 ago already reached ultimate truth. So if you penetrate into this subatomic particles with concentration and wisdom, then you will realize there are eight elements in each particle. Now there's earth element, water element, fire element, wind element, color, smell, taste and nutritive essence. Earth element is ultimate truth, but earth element does not mean the earth itself. It's a characteristic the earth element carries. The characteristic the earth element bears. What is the characteristic of earth element? Hardness and roughness. So the ultimate truth is roughness and hardness of earth element. It's not the earth itself. It's a characteristic it carries. Same as water. And the characteristic the water carries is cohesion or flowing. The fire, the characteristic of a fire element is heat or cold. The characteristic of wind element is pushing or supporting. So all these characteristics that carry are the ultimate truth, which are also subject to change, which are also impermanent. And oppressed by impermanence, they are suffering. And there's no abiding self or not any substance in it. So they are necessary, impermanent, suffering, and non-self. This is a characteristic of all conditional things, including ultimate truth. Okay? So in Abhidhamma, so ultimate truth, then what is ultimate truth? Ultimate truth means something that cannot be subdivided again. When you penetrate into earth element, you cannot divide it again into other things. The ultimate truth is, ultimate truth, they really exist by reason of their own intrinsic nature. The intrinsic nature of earth element is hardness and roughness. And that ultimate truth only can be experienced through the mind well-trained in concentration and wisdom. We see everything through conventional truth only, because our mind has not well developed through concentration and wisdom yet. But the Buddha, his mind is well developed, well-trained in concentration and wisdom, so he can penetrate into things as they really are. So in Abhidhamma, ultimate truth is fourfold. Number one is consciousness, citta. Number two, mental factors, cetasika. Number three, matter, rupa. And number four, nibbana. So Abhidhamma only concerned with ultimate truth. And only these four ultimate truths. What is consciousness? Citta. Consciousness is just awareness of an object. Or the process of cognizing an object is called consciousness, citta. And what's the meaning of mental factor, cetasika? Cetasika must arise accompanied with consciousness. And each cetasika performs their specific function in order to help consciousness in the total act of cognition. For example, I give an example. When you are practicing anapana, the consciousness knows aware of the nimitta. This is the function of consciousness. Aware, a characteristic of consciousness, awareness of an object, or knowing an object. So when you are practicing anapana sati with the nimitta, the consciousness knows anapana sati baga nimitta. This is called consciousness. And then associated mental factor of perception perceives the quality of sati baga nimitta and makes a sign or makes a mark as a condition to perceive it again. This is the same sati baga nimitta. This is the same sati baga nimitta. First time it appears, and the perception perceives it, then make a sign that for future to recognize it. This is the sati baga nimitta. So this is called perception, mental factor of perception. And the mental factor of one-pointedness focus the mind on the sati baga nimitta. It helps focus the mind on the sati baga nimitta. It's called one-pointedness. These are all mental factors. And mental factors of mindfulness mean attentiveness of the patibhagana nimitta. Not forgetful, not forget the patibhagana nimitta. It's called mindfulness. And the mental factor of feeling, experience, or enjoy the desirable aspect of patibhagana nimitta. It's called feeling. So all these mental factors associated with consciousness perform their specific function in order to help the consciousness in the total act of cognition. Is it clear? Okay. Then number three is called matter, rupa. In Pali we call rupa because it's derived from the verb rupati, in which means to be deformed, disturbed, to be oppressed or broken. The Lord Buddha himself declared, "O monk, why do you say rupa or material form? It is to be deformed, therefore it is called rupa." Deformed by what? Deformed by heat and cold, sunburn, wind, by flight or mosquito, and so on. So rupa undergoes alteration owing to adverse physical condition such as heat and cold. It's called rupa. For example, your skin. During the cold and dry season, your skin cracks. And when the sun is hot, your skin becomes reddened. So, all this material form change according to or owing to the adverse physical condition. It's called rupa. In Abhidhamma, we have 28 types of rupa. So the consciousness, mental factors, and matter, these three are called conditioned dharma. Why are they called conditioned dharma? Because they are produced by cause. They are produced by causes and conditions. And the causes and conditions are necessary and permanent. That's why they are called conditioned dharma. They are subject to change. But the last one, nibbana, is unconditioned dharma, which does not depend on any causes. So what is nibbana? Nibbana is a departure from the entanglement of craving. A departure from entanglement of craving, or distinguishment from all greed, hatred, and delusion, is called nibbana. Because as long as craving is remain there, one has to go around the cycle of birth and death. So once the craving is eradicated, through the realization of nibbana, one is free from the cycle of birth and death. So nibbana is unconditioned dharma, which do not depend on any causes. So they are, because they are not depend on any causes, so they are permanent, and they are happiness and non-self. Is it clear? So now we go to consciousness. Now we go into details. What is consciousness? In Abhidhamma, we have 89. 89 consciousness. What is the meaning of consciousness? To explain the ultimate truth. And the commentator gives four defining devices. Number one is called characteristic. Number two is called function, rasa. Number three is called manifestation. And number four, proximate cause. All the ultimate truth has these four defining devices. So what is the characteristic of consciousness? The characteristic of consciousness is awareness or knowing of an object. Very simple. And the function of consciousness is to be a forerunner of the mental state. Because consciousness, to be a forerunner of the mental state. Because consciousness presides over the mental state. And is always accompanied by all mental states, by mental states. And the manifestation of consciousness, the way it appears in a meditator's mind, the way it appears in meditator's experience, is a continuity of processes. It's not an I, it's not a being. The way consciousness presents or appears in the meditator's experience is a continuity of processes. It's not a human being, it's not an I, it's not a person. And the proximate cause of consciousness is mind and matter. The mind here refers to mental state. Because consciousness cannot arise first without depend on matter. And consciousness cannot arise without accompanied with mental state or mental factors. So the proximate cause of consciousness is mind and matter. So the consciousness is a process, it's a process of connecting an object. And in the blink of an eye, billions of consciousness arise and pass away. So consciousness arises at tremendous speed. So when you blink your eye, billions of consciousness already arise and pass away. Because of such rapid or such tremendous speed, that we think only one consciousness arises. The same consciousness arises all the time. And we think that when you see something, when I come into contact with something, when you see the visible object, many consciousness already arise and pass away. But because of its tremendous speed, that we think that I see the object. So we recognize, we identify consciousness as I. I see the visible object, I hear the sound. So at any one moment, only one consciousness arises. No consciousness can arise in a single moment. One moment, one consciousness arises and passes away. Then another moment, another consciousness arises and passes away. No full consciousness can arise at a single moment. So in conventional truth, one leads from conception to death. However, in the ultimate sense, one leads only for one conscious moment. If you identify consciousness as I, then you live only one conscious moment. Because consciousness keeps on arising and passing away. Although it arises at tremendous speed, each consciousness goes through the same three stages. It's arising, which we call birth, aesthetic decay, and dissolution, death. So in one mind moment, the lifespan of one mind moment, one citta, can divide into three stages. That is arising, static, and dissolution. This is the lifespan of one mind moment. It's very short. Now consciousness can be classified with respect to its nature, jati, in four ways. Number one, unwholesome consciousness, akusala. Number two, wholesome consciousness, kusala. And number three, repulsive consciousness, vipaka. And number four, functional consciousness, kiriya. Before I explain what is unwholesome consciousness, what is wholesome consciousness, we should understand the six types of roots first. There are six types of roots in Abhidhamma. There are three wholesome roots. There's non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. And another three types of wholesome roots. Three types of unwholesome roots. Greed, hatred, and delusion. So unwholesome consciousness is a consciousness rooted either in one or two of unwholesome roots. I repeat, unwholesome consciousness is a consciousness rooted either in one or two of unwholesome roots. Is it clear? Mm-hmm. What are unwholesome roots? So unwholesome consciousness is a consciousness either rooted in greed or hatred or greed and delusion. Either one or two, cannot be three. Consciousness rooted in greed cannot rooted in hatred at the same time. Why? Because the nature of greed and hatred are opposing each other. Greed is grasping an object. Hatred is
pushing away.
So their nature are opposing each other, so they cannot arise together at one mind moment. Okay? Then wholesome consciousness is a consciousness rooted either in two or three wholesome beliefs. Resultant consciousness is the result consciousness from the ripening of wholesome and unwholesome karma. It's called resultant consciousness. For example, eye consciousness is a resultant consciousness. Ear consciousness is a resultant consciousness. Rebirth consciousness is also resultant consciousness. Bhavanga is also resultant consciousness. It's the result from the previous karma. So resultant consciousness. Number four, functional consciousness. Kriya. Functional consciousness is just it just performs an activity without leaving any karmic effect. It's a pure activity without leaving any karmic effect. It's called Kriya, functional consciousness. So in Abhidhamma, we have 12 unwholesome consciousness. 8 rooted in greed. What are the 8? The greed means loba in Pali. Here, ranging from patience to subtle liking. Now, whatever type of mental state, from patience, up to the subtle liking, are under greed. So in Abhidhamma there are 8 consciousness rooted in greed. Number one consciousness accompanied by joy, associated with wrong view, unprompted. What's the meaning? Here, the three principles, we have to understand the three principles. One is accompanied by joy. This is feeling. Every consciousness must accompanied by one type of feeling, either pleasant feeling, displeasure, or neutral feeling. There are three types of feeling, pleasant feeling or joy, unpleasant feeling or displeasure, and neutral feeling. So this consciousness is accompanied by joy or pleasant feeling. And associated with wrong view, there are 62 types of wrong view in the teaching of the Buddha. And if you summarize these 62 types, there are only 3. Number one is called Natika Vichi. They deny there's any existence after death. Or they claim there's no becoming after death. After death, everything perishes away. It's called Natika Vichi. Number two is called Akiriya Vichi. They claim the good deeds or bad deeds one performs cannot bring any result. It's called Akiriya Vichi. Number three, Ahetuka Vichi. And they believe that there's no causes for defilement or purification of beings. Beings are purified or defiled by chance only. There's no causes. This is called Ahetuka Vichi. So these three wrong views, if you summarize again, it's only one. That is denying the working of karma. So here, associated with wrong view means holding the view there's no karma at its result. Then the next one, unprompted. Unprompted means spontaneously. without inducement from others, or without without imposed by others, or without premeditation, or without deliberation, concept spontaneity. So I give an example to make this clear. Spontaneously, accompanied with joy, a boy holding the view there's no evil in steal an apple from a shop. This type of consciousness, this type of action is under number one consciousness. One consciousness accompanied by joy associated with wrong view, unconscious. Is it clear? A boy with joy, holding the view, there's no evil in stealing. Then spontaneously steal an apple from a shop. But if this boy with a joy, holding the view, there's no evil in stealing, steal an apple after prompted by his friend, then it's number two consciousness. There's one consciousness accompanied by joy associated with wrong view prompted. Is it clear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So number three, one consciousness accompanied by joy associated with wrong view unprompted. So this is the same boy, accompanied by joy, spontaneously steal an apple from a shop, but without holding the wrong view, without holding the view, there's no evil in stealing. Maybe he knows it's evil in stealing, but he still wants to steal, not because of greed. So this dissociated from wrong view. He doesn't have the wrong view. And number four, one consciousness accompanied by joy dissociated from wrong view prompted. Only because of inducement by his friend that he steal an apple. The difference is only prompted and unprompted is here. Is it confusing?
Mm-hmm.
Clear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number five, one consciousness accompanied by equanimity associated with wrong view unprompted. A boy with neutral feeling spontaneously steal an apple from a shop, holding the view there's no evil in stealing. The meaning are same. Now the difference, the only difference is the feeling. Now he commits this bad deed with equanimity feeling, not with joy, but with neutral feeling only. Number six, one consciousness accompanied by equanimity associated with wrong view prompted. Then after being induced by his friend, then he feel an apple. Number seven, one consciousness accompanied by equanimity associated from wrong view unprompted. Here, he does not have any wrong view. He does not hold the view that there's no evil in stealing. Number eight, one consciousness accompanied by equanimity dissociated from wrong view prompted. Being prompted by his friend, he fear an apple, dissociated with wrong view, with equanimity. Okay, so far any question before I proceed? Because all these are basics. Later on, we have to use it again in our future talk. If you don't understand now, please ask.
I have one question. You say one of the four characteristics of our consciousness is function. You say that the activity does not result into a karmic result. Is that right?
No, the kriya, citta.
Yes.
The kriya means functional consciousness.
Right.
It's not function of consciousness, the functional consciousness.
Oh, but it does not result into any karmic result.
Right, right. It does not involve in any karmic effect.
I see.
No karma involved.
Okay.
first, when, for example, when Arahant perform an activity,
mm-hmm.
it does not leave behind any karmic force that will generate rebirth for Arahant.
I thought all that conscious activity all result into certain type of karmic result.
Except functional consciousness.
So that's the one exception.
Yes. But even resultant consciousness do not leave behind karmic force. It's the result of previous karma only. Resultant consciousness, the result of previous karma, for example, rebirth consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Why we are reborn here? Because of previous karma, that's why rebirth consciousness arises in this present life.
So do normal people have ahetuka, kriya, the functional?
Yes.
Normal people too?
Yes. Five door averting consciousness. As I keep on going, I will tell you what type of consciousness is functional consciousness. I will tell you.
Not
because
just
now, if I tell you, you don't understand.
Right, it's not just arahat.
No, not just arahat. Certain consciousness are my door averting consciousness. My door averting consciousness is functional consciousness.
Oh,
we have that too. We have that.
Yeah, that's as a result of karma.
It's not a result, it's functional.
It's functional.
Functional means it just performs an activity without leaving any karmic effect. It's called functional consciousness.
That's mind door averting, you see something?
Mind door averting. I will explain when I reach top process.
I believe you said that kusala citta were associated with either two or three of the wholesome
right.
roots. Could you explain why that is, two or three but not one?
When I go, I will reach there.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I better finish first before you ask questions, because all your questions will be answered in my future talk.
I have a question that may not be answered.
Okay.
Just wondering. How about number 8, except for accompanied by displeasure?
Mm. No, displeasure. Equanimity.
Right, but is there a consciousness accompanied by displeasure?
Okay.
With the other two factors the same?
Rooted in hatred. All consciousness rooted in hatred are accompanied by displeasure.
Okay, thank you.
Here, great to know. So when you enjoy eating, if your feeling is displeasure or joy, so all the consciousness rooted in greed, either accompanied by pleasant feeling or equanimity, not displeasure.
Mm-hmm.
Now we go to the displeasure one.
Okay. I was wrong.
That's what I said. All your questions will be answered. So we have gone through 8 consciousness rooted in greed. Now another 2 consciousness rooted in hatred. Number 1 consciousness accompanied by displeasure associated with aversion unprompted. So the feeling associated with hatred necessarily is unpleasant feeling. Cannot be pleasant. When you're angry, are you smile? No. So it cannot be accompanied by pleasant feeling. So when you are angry, it also cannot be accompanied by neutral feeling. It's always accompanied by displeasure feeling. Then associated with aversion. Aversion here, ranging from violence into subtle irritation, or are called aversion. Then unprompted. Spontaneously, without inducement from others. For example, a man murders another being, a man out of hatred, murder another man spontaneously. Such karma is under this consciousness. One consciousness accompanied by displeasure associated with aversion and prompted. And the second one consciousness accompanied by displeasure associated with aversion prompted. Same, a man out of hatred murder another man after premeditation or after induced by others. Only these two different.
So if you see something that's mildly annoying, is that considered?
When you see something?
If you see something and it's mild, it annoys you, is that considered unprompted because nobody is telling you to be annoyed? Or is it prompted by what you see?
It's unprompted.
That's considered unprompted.
So the only two concepts are rooted in hatred. Or, for example, a person after a harsh speech to his friend, spontaneously, it also says one concept accompanied by hesitation is considered with aversion and prompted. Or a friend after being prompted by his friend after a harsh speech to his friend, it's the second one. So you can fix any of your actions into this category. Now you can examine your daily life, which actions you perform is under which one, which consciousness.
Can I ask a question?
Yes?
With this chitta appearing and disappearing so quickly, I can't see how the prompting is going to appear at the same moment as consciousness as the actual action.
It seems, as I have said, that the consciousness arises at tremendous speed. So, it's very quick sometimes. But the example I did is to make you clear. For example, you do something, whether you're prompted by others or you do it spontaneously. For example, you come here, you come to the retreat here. Is it prompted or unprompted? Being persuaded by others or you come?
This could happen over weeks or days. It's not happening in the second of a moment of consciousness. That's what I'm saying.
But the consciousness occurs at that moment. It's called that. After that, another consciousness. At that very moment.
She might have a memory of what of. You might have a memory of what somebody said about someone else, and that's like a prompting.
No. How prompting is by inducement by others.
Has the prompting to be just at that moment, or it could be before?
Could be before, of course. After prompted, then the consciousness calls. Okay, another two is consciousness rooted in delusion. The consciousness rooted in greed also has delusion as underlying cause. Okay? The consciousness rooted in hatred also has delusion as underlying cause. So they are accompanied by hatred and delusion, or they are accompanied by greed and delusion. Delusion is always accompanied by all unwholesome consciousness. All unwholesome consciousness has delusion as an underlying cause. But this one, the two rooted in delusion, only delusion without greed and hatred. So the consciousness rooted in shared delusion. Number one consciousness accompanied by equanimity is associated with doubt. For example, a person doubts with enlightenment of the Buddha. A person doubts the noble eightfold path towards the realization of Nibbana. A person doubts the working of karma. So, under such situation, your consciousness is the consciousness accompanied by equanimity associated with doubt. Number two, one consciousness accompanied by equanimity associated with restlessness. This you experience very often in your meditation. So restlessness is unwholesome consciousness rooted in delusion. Once a person cannot concentrate on any object, The mind wanders here and there.
Is the exact related to ignorance in any way, delusion?
Delusion and ignorance is the same meaning.
Same thing.
Same meaning, moha.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, why not?
Why do you use the word equanimity as opposed to neutrality? Equanimity, I don't know, to me, means something which is kind of wholesome.
That wholesome is called tattara matyatapa. That's called impartiality. Tattara matyatapa, mental, one of the mental factors. What you mean is tattara matyatapa. Here, refer to feeling, vedana. We have three types of feeling. Equanimity or neutral feeling. Here, refer to neutral feeling. Another pleasant feeling. Another unpleasant feeling or pleasure. So the equanimity here refers to feeling aggregate.
I thought equanimity means a balanced feeling as opposed to neutrality.
Neutrality means neither rejection or elation. Neutral. So they are all 12 unwholesome consciousness in everyone's mental stream. They are only just 12 unwholesome consciousness. So whatever evil deed you have performed is under all this 12. You can examine which one. So it helps you to recognize your daily life, the action you have performed, either under rooted in greed or hatred or delusion. Only this 12, not more than that. And this 12 unwholesome consciousness can produce, when they are ripened, they can produce reserved consciousness in a four willful state. Except number 12, one consciousness accompanied by equanimity associated with restlessness. This is the weakest unwholesome consciousness, because our minds are always wandering here and there. So this is the weakest unwholesome consciousness. The remaining 11, when they ripen, this unwholesome karma ripens, they can produce rebirth consciousness in four wholesome states. Okay, any other questions?
I have a question about the Vedana relationship with the consciousness. So it sounds like in every consciousness there's always Vedana and Siddhis, Vedana
relationship.
So does there mean something? Why Vedana? Because in consciousness there are other mental factors. But here in this characteristic 12 kinds of consciousness, always have something to see the Vedana associated.
Not only this talk, all consciousness is accompanied with one Vedana.
Yeah, it's this because of the karmic horizon.
No, this is the sixth law of the consciousness. All consciousness must accompanied by Vedana. It's a fixed law.
Yeah, because my question is, because we know that there also have some mental factors,
right. The perception.
But somehow divided 18 life consciousness, they always have one specific Vedana associated with a specific consciousness.
It's a function of Vedana to experience that desirable and undesirable concept. Just like perception, you know, must accompany with all consciousness in order to perceive the quality of the object, so that next time we can recognize.
Okay. It's one of the chaita seekers, right?
Yes, right. Vedana is one of the chaita seekers.
Does Vedana depend on karma?
Yes, yes. I think This mental state must arise accompanied with all consciousness. All consciousness, all mental states, and all rupa are the result of karma. I cannot say all, but because some are functional consciousness. So when the vedana associated with functional consciousness, it does not arise because of karma. Only when associated with resultant consciousness, the vedana associated with resultant consciousness is arise from karma. Okay, I should proceed. Five minutes more. Should I proceed or would you like to ask any question? Proceed. Another 5 minutes. The consciousness can be classified with respect to its nature in four ways. Repeat. Wholesome, unwholesome consciousness, wholesome consciousness, resultant consciousness, functional consciousness. We have already discussed 12 unwholesome consciousness. In Pali, we call akusala. Why is called akusala? Because it's mentally unhealthy, morally blameworthy, and productive of painful results. That's why it's called akusala in Pali. Now we come to wholesome consciousness. In Pali, we call kusala. Why is called kusala? Because it's mentally healthy, morally praiseworthy, and productive of pleasant results. That is called kusala or wholesome. Yeah, it stands for wholesome consciousness. Number one, one consciousness accompanied by joy associated with knowledge unprompted. Here also three division. One is feeling, either accompanied by joy or equanimity of neutral feeling. As associated with knowledge of wisdom, jnana, same meaning. Prompted, unprompted, and prompted. For example, a man spontaneously performed a generous deed, understanding with joy, understanding this is a wholesome deed, they will produce good results. Under such situation is the first number one consciousness. One consciousness accompanied by joy associated with knowledge unprompted. You may ask, why a person spontaneously knows how to perform a generous deed? For example, when a boy seeing a monk come for Pindapat, then he spontaneously go and offer him with joy. But some only after prompted by others, then he go and perform that generous deed. What makes difference? So a person spontaneously know how to perform a generous deed because of previous inclination. Because previously they have performed something before. So when they see a monk coming, spontaneously he knows how to perform that dana because of previous tendency. So number two, all consciousness accompanied by joy associated with knowledge prompted. This boy only after prompted by others, then he performed a generous deed with the understanding this is a wholesome deed. Associated with knowledge. This consciousness has three roots, three wholesome roots. That is the wholesome root of non-greed, wholesome root of non-hatred and non-delusion. How? For example, he performed a generous deed. It's the root of non-greed. He has no attachment to his property. That's why he can give. And he performed, for example, he offered fruit to a monk because of the good will he has for a monk. That good will is non-hatred. And he understands it's a good deed that can produce good results. This is called wisdom or non-delusion. So this type of consciousness has three roots, three wholesome roots. Okay? Number three, one consciousness accompanied by joy dissociated from knowledge unprompted. Here, dissociated from knowledge. He does not understand this is a good deed. But he still performs that generous deed with joy. So this type of consciousness has only two roots. The root of non-greed, the root of non-hatred, but has no wisdom. These three roots and two roots are very important. If number three, one consciousness accompanied by joy, dissociated from knowledge unprompted, if this karma ripens and produces rebirth consciousness in a human realm, then his rebirth consciousness is accompanied only with two roots, without the root of wisdom. And such a person, if he practices samatha, he cannot attain any jhana. And if he practices vipassana, he cannot realize nibbana. Because his rebirth consciousness is devoid of root of wisdom. This is very important when you perform any good deed with the understanding of the law of karma.
I think I should stop here now. Let us continue tomorrow. Any questions?
Abhidhamma is very interesting. If you understand all, you feel that so many things become different now.
Okay. Did you say that all resultant conscious, all resultant consciousness,
resultant consciousness,
resultant consciousness cannot produce new karma?
Resultant consciousness means the
resulting consciousness cannot lead to new karma?
Because the resultant consciousness is the result of the karma. So how can it produce karma?
Well, as an example, in the case of a violent act like murder, one can murder, and it's because of one's karma, but does that now not, does that act not then produce?
Okay. A murderer, commits unwholesome karma of killing.
Right.
The person who was murdered is reaping his own bad result. It's too A murderer is committing a new karma of killing. A murderer. But a person who was dead by that murder is reaping his death.
I see. Okay.
Result.
Could resultant consciousness also be the remorse that someone might feel after having committed a
Remorse is unwholesome consciousness.
Okay.
It's not resultant.
Could it be like I kill somebody and say I get even punished in the court of law or whatever, would that be the resultant karma, the bad karma of killing causes that result?
The punishment.
Punishment?
The punishment is the present result. The present result. He has to bear the future result again in the next life.
But would that even the present result is not immediate present, it's another future one, right?
And in this present
life? It may not be in a future birth, but it is something in the future that you face.
Yes. Am I right? Can you repeat?
it could be not in another birth. Say I do something, I get angry, and I hit you, and everybody here gets on me and hit me for hitting you. Now the fact that I suffer the beating of the rest.